Russell Simmons co-founded Def Jam Records after the success he had managing Run DMC. Run was Simmons' younger brother. DMC, Daryl McDaniels, is our next guest. Run DMC had its first hit, It's Like That, in 1983. By 1985, they'd become the first rap group to earn a gold or a platinum album. They were also the first rap group to have their videos played on MTV and the first to appear on the cover of Rolling Stone. In 2002, Run DMC lost member Jam Master Jay when he was shot and killed in a recording studio in Queens. McDaniels now performs solo. I spoke to him in 1997. Here's one of Run DMC's hits.
Yo, Jay! Wait. Wait.
Day when I was chillin' in Kentucky Fried Chicken, just minding my business, eating food and finger licking. This dude walked in, looking strange and kinda funny. Went up to the front with a menu and his money. He didn't walk straight, kinda side to side. He asked this old lady,
yo, is this Kentucky Fried?
The lady said, yeah, smiling, he smiled back. He gave a quarter and his order.
Small fried.
How did you first hear rap?
Wow, that's a good question. The first time I ever heard rap was back in 1970. I think it was either 76 or 78. There was a radio show. It was like an underground radio show, and the disc jockey's name was Eddie Chiba. And the station was in New York. It was WFUV. And that was the first time I ever heard rap. He had a rhyme where he said, when you mess around in New York town, you go down with the disco Chiba clown. You go down, go down, go down, go down, you go down. You know, it was really simple. But the first time I ever heard rap was back in 76 or 78 on WFUV DJ Eddie Chiba.
And what were your very early rhymes like?
Oh, well, my very early rhymes were, basically simple, talking about I had the best rhymes, nobody had more rhymes than me, my DJ was the best DJ, we had the loudest sound system, it was simple stuff like C to an apple, apple to a core, I am the man with the rhymes galore, rock a rhyme for me, rock a rhyme for you, and everybody catch the boogaloo flu, Hollis, Queens is where I'm from, don't be stupid, don't be so dumb, so it's basically boasting about my neighborhood, me being the best MC, and nobody can take me out.
Speaking of your neighborhood, you're from Hollis, Queens.
Yes.
In New York, and the two other members of Run DMC are from the same neighborhood, I think.
Yes.
And you went to school together, right? You knew each other before you were a group.
Yeah, definitely. We all lived in five blocks of each other. We went to elementary and high school and college together.
So when did you actually form Run DMC? Where were you in your school years?
Well, me and Run first started rhyming and DJing together in my basement. I actually taught Run how to DJ. He was rapping first, then I taught him how to DJ, how to do the quick mix and how to spin records back and how to blend two of the same records together. So Run and DMC was like formed back in around 1980. We started DJing in my basement, and then when he got... he got better equipment to me for Christmas, so we started DJing in his attic. So I would say Run DMC was formed right then. And then as the group, it was 1982 when we put together It's Like That and That's the Way It Is a Sucker MCs, which was our first single. And then we needed a DJ, and that's when we got Jam Master Jay, who was the neighborhood DJ. He was like the best DJ in the neighborhood. Jay would set up his equipment in the park, and he'd plug it into the light post, and then we would play until a cops would come and stop us. So actually, we came together as a professional group in 1982.
And were you in high school and college?
We was all in college. We was all in our first semester of college.
Did you leave college when she started performing?
Yep, we took a leave of absence and been absent ever since.
What were your parents' reaction to taking a leave of absence to perform? Did they think you were making a big mistake?
No, they was mad. They was like, are you crazy? What are you doing? And, even when they got a hint of, me wanting to be a rapper as my career, as my job, you know, they was telling me stuff like, "That's ridiculous. You better stay in school, and we're not paying all this money for you to go to St. John's for nothing." And as a matter of fact, when I went to record our first single, I didn't tell my parents because I knew they wouldn't have let me go. So they was outraged, you know.
How did they find out?
Well, I had to come tell them where I was at for the last 15 hours, you know, because I just left the house. It was a Sunday afternoon. I left the house about 1 o'clock, and I ain't come home in the morning until the next morning, like 5 a.m. in the morning.
Did you play them the record? Did they like it?
Yeah, I played them the record, and they didn't really like it until they heard it on the radio.
Now, was that It's Like That?
Yeah, that was It's Like That.
Now, when you started performing, it was the big gold chain era.
Right. Actually, we started that.
Yeah, there's some great pictures of you with giant big gold chains.
Yeah. Like when we were saying Russell was a big part of that, Jay was always dressing like that. The way Run DMC dressed, Jay always dressed like that. So when Russell seen Jay, he said, "That's how you're going to dress." And that's when the gold chains came into play. Jay had a gold chain before he even thought of me in Run DMC. Jay wore chains like that when he was in high school.
What do you think it did for your image back then?
What it actually did show that we had money. You know, it showed that we had the big gold chain and a fancy car and that we were truly the superstars of the neighborhood. Well, you know, because if you got a big chain and the other guy don't, you must be doing something. And, you know, it also brought a bad image to us because people that didn't know Run DMC before we had an album cover out thought we was just drug dealers because most of the drug dealers was wearing chains like that and driving in big cars even before the rappers made it big.
You were teenagers when you started performing. How did you handle fame when it first hit you and you were still in your teens?
Oh, man, fame hit us so quick. I mean, it's like now we got this thing that we say that certain periods in our career we can't remember and we call it dazing. It was just like we was just in a daze. It was just like everything happened so quick, you know, the first record. Then we did the rap album, the first rap album to go gold because nobody thought rap was going to sell. Then right after that, we got the first video on MTV, and that was, like, really a precedent because the only black star they was actually playing on MTV was Michael Jackson. Then we got on there, and then when Rockbox, which was the video that got on MTV, went into heavy rotation, rustling everybody down at the record company and at Rush Management was all excited. "Y'all on MTV?" And me and Runner J was like, "What is MTV? Why are you guys so happy about this?" And then the big tour, the Fresh Fresh Tour, and we was going around selling out Madison Square Garden and all the big venues. It all happened so fast that, you know, it's like it smacked us upside the head. You know, the money, the fame, and fortune, it didn't go to our heads, but it smacked us upside our heads.
A lot of rap groups really brag about their neighborhood, often bragging about how tough it is.
Yeah.
What was your neighborhood like, Hollis, Queens?
Hollis, Queens was, you know, it was a middle-class, hard-working neighborhood. It had a lot of educated people there, but you also had, you know, violence and drugs and prostitution and murder and rape and robbery right on the corner. You know, it's just good that we came from good families who made sure we went to school, didn't play hooky, or run with the wrong crowd. So you had good and bad going on at the same time.
Now, did you ever feel like you had to cover up the fact that your neighborhood was pretty middle class and that your parents wouldn't let you play hooky?
Nah, it was no way we could hide it because that was something the reporters made known to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they thought it was a big thing. All right, here you got this rap group making all this money, running around talking about their cars and, you know, how good they are. And, you know, they're selling a lot of records. And, you know, it was a thing where rap was supposed to be only done by, you know, people from the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, Grandmaster Flash and them, they came from the heart of the Bronx. And Afrika Bambaataa, they was from Bronx and Manhattan. They was from the ghetto. You know what I'm saying? Apartment buildings and broken glass everywhere. People use a subway. We came from Hollis, Queens, where you got separate houses, grads, backyards, cookout, Catholic school, and all this other stuff going on. But, you know, we wanted people to know You know, my mother and father, Jay's mother and father, runs by hardworking, educated people. But then you had the people that, you know, lived in the middle of the block, you know, they had to rob and steal for the next meal. But a lot of the press wanted to emphasize, I guess they wanted to let the world know that these guys are fronting. They might look tough and they might talk tough on their record, but they're middle class, Catholic school, nice guys.
Was there ever any pressure on you from producers or record companies to harden your image, to make it more hardcore?
No, but we felt pressure on ourselves. In 1990, we made an album called Back From Hell. And on this Back From Hell album, it was like the first time we ever really used profanity. And it was like the first time we ever really came at everybody else in the industry. It was, you know, the first album where we kind of degraded women. You know, we didn't really talk bad like most records did, but we started talking. We started, you know, straying that way. And that was like one of our worst albums. So we learned a big lesson from that. I mean, that album was like a flop for Run-DMC. It only sold maybe 250,000 copies. That was the year everybody was saying Run-DMC was over. You know what I'm saying? Because we strayed from what we was really about. Even though we were still doing live shows, we made this album, which was trying to go with the flow of the times. When keeping it real is being real to yourself and staying who you are.
Now, I know that you're Christian. Was there like a change in your life where you were born again?
Right around that time. I mean, you know, the records wasn't selling. Everybody was saying we was over. Run was smoking a lot of reefer. I was drinking a lot of beer. Things wasn't well within the group. You know, people was like saying, yo, Run DMC is over. You know, their time is over. And that was like really a down time. And, you know, with anybody, when it's time to, when you are down and out on your deathbed, I don't care who you are, you're going to scream out to God, you know, and he's going to answer, and it's up for you to answer his calling. And, you know, basically, there was nowhere else we could turn but to God. You know, God help us. You know, and we was like, yo, we're very thankful for everything that happened and this and that. And if only we could, you know, just get back to what we was all about. But we had to make that adjustment in our minds ourselves. You know what I'm saying? But it was like really a down time. I mean, the women, it was like the worst time for Run-DMC of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You know, all that stuff that you think, when I'm not going to go that way, I'm not going to happen to us. And it was like really a bad time for us.
One of the things that you've done in some of your records is take sample things from rock and heavy metal. One of your most famous records, Walk This Way, uses the famous Aerosmith recording on it. And I'm wondering if you feel like that exposed you to audiences that rap records might not have otherwise reached.
Most definitely. Most definitely, it exposed us to, you know, although at the same time, we was already on MTV. But the reason why we made a lot of rock records is because before rap records was made, we used to have to find things to rap over. And rock and roll had a lot of drum breaks and a lot of drum beats. And rock and roll had a lot of loud guitars. And rap was like an aggressive art form, and it was hard, so we had to find rock records. We couldn't rap over violins and flutes and soft stuff. We needed something hard, and we wanted to make a record using the Aerosmith beat. But Rick Rubin, who was our producer at the time, he was an Aerosmith fan back when it was large. He was like, oh, you don't know whose record that is you're rapping over? And they're Aerosmith, and they was big when I was younger, and this and that. Hey, you know what y'all should do? Y'all should do their record over. Now, me and Run was real mad, because all we wanted to do was say our rhymes over that beat. Rick Rubin wanted us to learn Steven Tyler's lyrics. And we was like, oh, Rick, you're going to ruin our career and this and that. That's not going to work. You know, we're barely getting over by rapping. You know, doing our own lyrics over rock. Now you want us to do a cover of a rock song? But we did it, and it worked. And it opened up us to a whole wider audience.
Are you still wearing Adidas?
Yes. I'm sitting here with Adidas on from head to toe. And we're always wearing Adidas.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. We're out of time. I wish we weren't, but we got to go.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for talking with us. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
Daryl McDaniels co-founded Run DMC. He now performs solo. Our interview was recorded in 1997.